Hello guys, welcome back to the Dido Show, episode 43. This week I'm very exciting because I had a chat with Mark Freeman, a bestseller author, personal business coach, and a keynote speaker. Mark Freeman is the best-selling author of The Mind Workout, a book that I recommend for anybody struggling with mental health, because it's what we got. This episode is going to be about mental health and how Mark Freeman came about to cope with his own mental health issues, and how I recommend tips and tricks to overcome. And of course, this episode is about how to overcome this mental health problem, if you have any. And I think lots of us these days have. It's a good thing that we're starting the conversation. I'm very proud to introduce to you Mark Freeman to the show.
All right. Today I'm introducing Mark Freeman, the bestseller author of The Mind Workout. Hi, Mark. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. Thanks for reaching out.
It's an honor. I read The Mind Workout. I'm actually reading it again this week, and I think it's a fantastic book. But before I get onto the book, how did you end up with your current line of work as an author and a keynote speaker and in coaching as well?
I think it was, I got into it after getting out of therapy.
Okay.
And seeing that nobody was talking about recovery skills.
Okay.
And on the internet. And it was really, when I was in therapy and when I was struggling with my mental health, I didn't go online, I didn't search about mental health, mental illness, anything like that.
Okay.
And because I didn't think there was really anything wrong with me.
Okay.
And then I realized there was. I kind of hit rock bottom.
Yeah.
Got help, and then I got better.
Okay.
And I thought that was so, I had always assumed that mental illnesses were chronic and you're stuck with these things forever. And so learning about that and getting over that made me really excited that, why are we so off base on this? Why don't people know about this? Okay. I was like, there must be like lots of other people doing recovery, and there must be this whole community. So I started to visit mental health communities online.
Okay.
And then was just really shocked that nobody was talking about these skills. Well, and then so I started to blog about it.
Okay.
And it grew from there.
What kind of age was that, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, I was 20, it was like 27, 28.
All right, go ahead.
When I first started looking for therapy and kind of noticing there was something wrong, and then I was done therapy when I was 29, I think.
Okay.
And kept working on my own, and then I would say I was kind of in great mental health around like 30, 31.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Quite early on then. All right. What kind of tricks did you? I think he told me it just took 3 years. So what kind of a coping mechanism that you use for your mental health issues?
It was really about cutting out compulsions.
Okay. Yeah.
And changing how I interacted with the stuff in my head.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You mentioned in your book quite a lot, yeah.
Yeah, because I found, and like, coping is an interesting thing, because we often look for some kind of way to cope with the stuff that's going on, but it helped me to realize that most of the things I thought were coping were actually making it worse.
Yeah.
And I think that was like, that was a big shift that I had to make, because a lot of the things I was doing as a reaction to the thoughts and emotions and physical experiences, I thought would be helpful. But I think as a society, we also see like coping as like a good thing. Yet it often really just digs the hole deeper.
Yeah. I've had my own problem myself. Going into the book, in a few words, how did you end up writing the Mind Workout book? How did that come about?
So I always wanted to write books.
Okay.
In fact, realizing that I couldn't write was in some ways the catalyst for getting help.
Okay.
Like the fact that the book exists is very much proof of the skills in the book.
Oh, yeah.
And I had actually taken a bunch of months off work to write a novel.
Okay.
I was going to write a novel, and then at the end of, I think it was like 6 months, I had written basically nothing.
Okay.
Even though I had all this time during the day, but of course, as often happens when we're struggling with our mental health,
yeah,
I just filled the time with ways to make my mental health worse. So.
I hear you. I can definitely laugh at that. So how long did it take to actually write the Mind Workout?
So it's quite a journey with writing a book.
Yeah.
And I was working, I was like, oh, you know what, I'm going to take some time and write a book. But of course, at that point, I was taking care of my mental health. I was doing very well.
Right.
And so I actually did write the book. But I really just wrote the start of it.
Okay.
And then, part of kind of really working on healthy skills for me was saying, look, I'm not going to do this alone.
Yeah.
So when I set out to write the book, I very purposely set out and set the goal that I was only going to put the book out if, you know, I got an agent and I got a publisher and all of that.
Right. Okay.
And so that journey, I think, is part, you know, you got to kind of incorporate that into how long the book took
mm-hmm.
to write. Actually, you know, writing some of the book and a proposal and finding an agent and then all of the pitching. And then after you get a publisher, then you kind of got to rewrite it for the publisher.
Okay. Right.
So that whole journey is, I believe, about 2.5 years.
Wow. Like quite some time.
From starting to write it to it actually being on bookshelves.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's a great book. I mean, I know it's. I'm going to try to read it at least once a year now because it really resonated with me. Especially when you mentioned that you want to be a stone, a rock. You know, not trying to fit anything. I really resonated that with me a lot. You know.
Thank you for reading it. Yeah, I still do the exercises in it. I find it's really useful to come back to that stuff anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because we often are just getting in the way of doing the things we want to do in life, and those exercises really help getting around the stuff in our heads that gets in the way of being ourselves.
Oh, tell me about it. As somebody said, my mind is like a bad neighborhood. I hate going there alone. And I kind of love that quote. So today, I mean, do you still have problems or issues to deal with your mental health, or is this getting better? Is this something that's ongoing thing, or you feel like you've passed a page or something?
But totally, and especially as each year goes by, is very much something that was in the past,
mm-hmm.
and I think that also is something that gets missed. And I, because I'll still see that too if you go on like a mental illness forum.
Yeah.
Or something like that. You'll see lots of people say, oh, you know, you're going to struggle with this forever. And,
mm-hmm.
yeah. Some people say they recover, but whatever, the intrusive thoughts or the anxiety will always be there.
Yeah.
And I really think it's important to help people understand that is not true.
Okay.
Like my brain does not do the things it did in the past. A big part of that was recognizing that stuff was me.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I was doing all of these compulsions with stuff in my head as well.
Yeah.
And I think it is fascinating. I think a lot of the myths we hear about recovery
mm-hmm.
are put out there by people who haven't actually themselves. like it's kind of like like if you were going to the gym,
yeah, yeah,
and there were just a whole lot of people outside of the gym who don't exercise telling you, like, don't go into the gym. It's not possible. You'll always sweat. It's never, you know, it'll never get easy. Yeah. You'll hate it. And they actually don't know what the experience of having good mental health and taking care of their mental health is like.
Yeah.
And I think, and that's very true on the part of, I would say, a lot of professionals,
mm-hmm.
Where they just kind of assume, okay, I don't have a mental illness, so I don't need to take care of my mental health.
Mm, yeah.
They also haven't gotten into the practice of actually taking care of their mental health. And so I think for my next book, part of what I'm doing right now is interviewing people that have made these big transformations and gotten over a mental illness or addiction diagnosis and left it behind.
Great.
And hopefully we'll start to build our kind of our mental health practices and sectors around that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Similar to in fitness, like we kind of build the fitness world around people who take really good care of their physical fitness.
Yeah.
And we haven't done that in mental health.
Yeah, and that's funny you mentioned sports fitness, because as you mentioned in your book, when people want to get fit, you work out on your body every day, and that's how you get fitter. But we don't actually see, we should do the same with our brain, but we don't actually see the same way. And sometimes, even though I do know, that's the only way, it's got to be a daily exercise, which totally makes sense when you think about it. But it's funny that you mentioned it, because I didn't see it that way before when you mentioned it's something that you've got to do daily to see any results.
Exactly, and I think doing it daily in a very holistic way around things that we actually want to add into our lives,
mm-hmm.
In the same way that an athlete probably has some kind of goal they're building towards, like even if they're, say, they want to run a 10K race.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not, they're not going to the gym every day, or in that case, going like out to run on the streets or whatever, because they're trying to avoid something,
yeah,
or control something. And I think that's often, you know, when people still go to like a therapist or something, they're like, I want to get rid of this thought, or I want to get rid of this feeling.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not actually about building a skill to keep. It's about avoiding something.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've kind of approached mental health in this way that we don't approach anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And it's unfortunate. So yeah, that's what I would definitely say to anybody out there. Yeah, making that shift to what's the skill actually I want to build and keep in my life is so useful.
I know, and as you mentioned in your book, and I saw something I have to do sometime, I think in every 6 months or so, it's taking stock of where you are and then thinking where you want to be. And that's because I've read that in other books, and that's so powerful to actually write it down, because you can see where you are and then think about where you want to be. And it's important sometimes to take a pause and do that, you know. And I don't think not a lot of us actually take the time to do that.
Yeah, we are very busy,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's so easy to be like, oh, we get very reactive. There's this other thing I've got to do right now. Oh, there's this thing.
Yeah.
And very quickly, we're putting all of those other things in charge of our lives, and then we just end up in a place we never intended to be.
I know. For me, the minutes I've taken on, I've been taking on my practice, exercise every day, and meditation. What else is there out there, like in terms of tools that you can have to actually kind of counteract any problems that will occur in mental health, so you're not too much at risk? Is anything else that you can kind of advise me on?
There's all sorts of things. What I always encourage people to do,
mm-hmm,
to start with is actually looking at, like, what are those things you want to be doing more of in life?
Mm. Right.
And through seeing that, we can then start to look at what the barriers are that are coming up. because they could be some barriers happening in our heads.
Yeah.
You know, we say, oh, anytime I you know, I really want to get down and be creative, or I really want to do this thing around, it could be a relationship or work, I then always start to tell myself, oh, well, I can do that after I do this. Okay. Or, you know, once I feel ready, then I'll go and, you know, be in a relationship, and or once I feel ready, or if I'm in the right place, then I can do all the creative things I want to do.
Yeah.
And so they might see something like that. And so it's identifying barriers like that. And then we see the exercises we can work on to build skills. So then we might, in that case, see, okay, I always avoid doing the things I want to do because I'm chasing some right feeling or right place. So then it's about saying, okay, you know, this week, just like you would with a physical fitness exercise, this week I'm going to work on doing things at the wrong time or when I feel like it's wrong, and really start to push into that experience and show the brain, oh, I can do things whenever I want to do them.
Okay.
And yeah, so it's kind of like developing, you know, developing a fitness plan like that, except it's mental fitness. So seeing where those kind of like weaknesses are,
okay,
and then building skills around them.
Oh yeah, yeah. As you mentioned in your book, if you step away from your, from being anxious, yeah, anything in the end is gonna make you anxious. So it's like, you know,
exactly.
That's very good. For me, I think it's winter time. In the summer, I'm fantastic. I'm in top form, but winter time, I mean, I'm just rubbish. anything you can advise for the wind, for people that suffer a bit more in the winter time than others?
Sure, I think part of it is embracing it. Like, just being able to recognize it is so useful.
And
then, too, we start to see where we end up listening to ourselves in ways that aren't useful to ourselves.
Yeah, yeah.
Because when we see, oh, because you can really step back and say, okay, what happens at wintertime? Why do I get into this mood? Or what do I do around the experience in winter? So I know for me, so that was something I used to notice as well.
Okay.
So I know for me, as winter's coming up, I very much expect my brain to, you know, not, how to describe it, kind of, I know it's going to think things aren't as good or kind of be slower.
Mm-hmm.
So knowing that in advance, in the wintertime, I really now try to embrace winter and celebrate it.
Okay. Yeah. I've been trying to do that.
Yeah.
I'm successful most days, but sometimes it's a tough one. And
I think it's that. Yeah. Having structures in place, like the same as if somebody kind of hates exercise, they'll probably be helped at first by having a much more kind of regimented schedule.
Okay.
Like, oh, I'm going to go do this exercise. Like, it can really help to have all of the exercises planned out, because if at any moment there's something not planned out, they know their default is going to be, well, I'll just stay here and watch TV then.
Yeah.
Or I don't know what to do right now, so I'll go research it on my phone.
Mm-hmm.
And then 2 hours later of researching fitness exercises, they have no more time to go to the gym.
Oh, so be prepared. Expect that things are going to get tougher. So be prepared for the winter time.
Exactly. I find that preparation is key.
All right. Thanks. Where can we find you? On Twitter. You're on Twitter, I think?
Yes.
Yeah.
On Twitter, my handle is The Path to Change.
Oh, yeah. I've seen that one. Okay.
And then my website is markfreeman.ca.
I will put that in the show notes anyway, but just for the beginning.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
No, mate, it's a pleasure. Something a bit more personal. What do you do for fun?
For fun?
Yeah, for fun.
I do. So actually, I really like all the things I do.
Okay.
And I think that's in part doing mental health stuff started as a hobby.
All right.
And I enjoy all of the creative things I get to put into it. And I think, and for me, that was part of it, because I get to kind of draw and make jokes and make videos, and so that always has kind of satisfied my creativity needs.
Okay. Yeah.
And when I'm not doing that, I really like going to the gym, cooking.
Okay, cooking, yes.
Cooking and traveling. I always like to travel in interesting ways and eat food and see places that are kind of off the beaten path.
All right.
And I would say that's probably one of the, so being curious and exploring the world is probably one of my favorite fun things to do. Yeah.
Sounds awesome. It looks like you're having fun. What do you do to relax? Kind of like meditate, I'm thinking, I'm guessing.
So I get into meditation like it's an extreme sport.
Okay.
So I do, I love going to silent meditation retreats and things like that.
Right.
But because of that, I probably meditate in a way people wouldn't see as relaxing.
Right.
I don't think of meditation like that.
Okay.
When I come to meditation, it's very much like, how long can I sit here without moving?
All right.
And for me, what was really important was learning how to do everything in a way that's relaxing.
Okay.
And bringing that restfulness into each thing I do.
All right.
Whereas in the past I was very much, I only did things when there was pressure on me and anxiety, and I really relied on anxiety to get stuff done. And so now I really like to do everything in the same way.
Oh, in a fun way kind of thing.
And to make sure I'm doing everything in a way that is fun and relaxing. So
all right.
That when I'm done one thing, and I think this is part because now often things can be very busy.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought in the past I used to get so stressed out about something that then I would just kind of I would just be so exhausted at the end.
All right.
And now I can't. Yeah, that wouldn't be useful.
Okay.
Because I have other things to go and do. So now I very much do everything in a way that I feel like refreshed at the end.
All right.
And okay. I find that's key.
Staying with the inner child or something. Awesome.
Exactly. children are great. Yeah.
Oh yeah, aren't they? They are fantastic.
Whether it's our inner child or something, yeah, thinking of it as entertaining a little kid is a great way to do everything. Absolutely.
No, I read that somewhere, and I'm trying to implement that every day. It's a funny way of looking at things. You know, when you mentioned that you meditate, what do you tell yourself in your head? I mean, is it like you got a mantra, or you just concentrate on your breathing? What goes through your head when you're in a session and meditation session?
Yeah, so I would see meditation, especially in terms of what's going on in my head, is doing nothing in my head.
Right.
And I really enjoy the Zen practice that's known as just sitting.
Okay.
So you're not actually following your breath.
Okay.
You're just sitting. And I like this past year was about, in some ways, exploring different types of meditations. I went to a couple different, kind of week-long silent meditation retreats in a couple different traditions.
Okay.
It's great to explore many different ways of meditating, I find.
Okay.
My personal practice, though, is about just sitting.
And what goes through your head? You don't think of anything?
Nothing.
Really? Because
be two things. Then I'd be just sitting and thinking, and that's too much. So it's really about making it easy.
Wow.
Just sit.
How do you manage that? I find it very hard to not think how long did that take you to come to that?
Because thinking is so hard too, right?
I know.
Thinking is exhausting.
It is. It is.
I would encourage it's a neat thing to check out. I think we assume at first, because we're so bought into always doing stuff in our heads, that we approach meditation the same way. Like, okay, I'm going to sit here. And even when people hear about, watching thoughts or something like that, they're often still like, we're very engaged in it. Okay, let's watch the thoughts. And ooh, like, we kind of narrate it like we're sportscasters, mm-hmm. like watching a football game. Like, ooh, okay, there, that thought passed it. Ooh, that thought just caught it. And like, oh, that thought hit it with its head. And we're very still just doing the same thing we always do, but now we're doing it on a cushion. Mm-hmm. And it was neat to discover we don't have to do that. Like, I don't have to do that stuff in my head all the time.
Okay. Well, I need to check that out. Silent retreat, meditation. Any books that you can recommend me? Except one of yours, because I'm going to put your books as well. But any books that you recommend that actually change your life yourself? Well, it's a big list, right?
Yeah, because I really like books.
All right.
What I found most useful, and I would say even as I'm getting into my next book, which is about, in many ways, mental health and change, but the books I'm reading are not about mental health.
Yeah.
They're about how businesses change.
Okay.
And I find that's one thing that I found very useful, because a lot of the skills that I talk about in my book and that I work on with like coaching clients and do workshops on mm-hmm. actually came from the business world.
Right. Okay.
And that it helped me to see that like recovery from mental illness was a big process of innovation. Mm-hmm. Like I had to do all of these things that I'd never done before. I had to do things differently in my head, and I didn't even know that was a thing that was possible.
Okay.
And I feel like the business world, that's a much bigger focus. Mm-hmm. There's a much bigger focus with companies on the fact that you have to innovate. And if you don't innovate, your company fails. And that innovation is about doing things you've never done before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And we have far more supports for making changes, and we understand that process better, I find, in the business world, more so than we do in psychology.
Okay. All right.
So that's one thing I would just say in terms of books, is to not... There's a lot of great ideas outside of where we often expect to find the great ideas.
Oh, yeah, I see what you mean, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that can... Like, even like a book that springs to mind right now is the book Moneyball.
Money Vault, you said?
Moneyball.
Ball.
Yeah, and there's a movie with Brad Pitt in it as well. They made a movie out of it, but it was a nonfiction book.
Okay.
Moneyball,
yeah.
Yeah, it's what it's really about there is looking at the data mm-hmm. and seeing things that our assumptions often make us miss.
Oh, yeah, okay.
It's actually, if you read through it and then think about how would I apply these same principles to my mental health, it helps us look past a lot of our assumptions we maybe think about mental health or think about ourselves that become barriers.
I see what you mean there, yeah. Some of it can be connected in some way, and finding stuff that you don't think that you'll find them there. I think sometimes that happens to me, and I just think, wow, this is great. Like some books end up on your lap like by chance, but you're like, oh man, this is exactly what I needed to hear. That's not fantastic. Any others?
Totally.
Any others that you can think of?
You know what, one of the books that I'm reading over the holidays right now,
what is it?
It's by a Zen master named Dogen.
Okay.
It's called The Shobo Genzo. I don't recommend, this is not a book recommendation, it's just the one I'm reading. It's huge. It's, I think, 1,000 pages.
Wow.
It cost like $80 to buy.
Okay.
It's the Zen master. It's his complete collected writings. And so basically every day at his Zen temple, he was either giving lectures or writing notes to the monks. And it's fascinating to read through because so much of it is just about things like instructions to the monks on how to properly wipe their ass. It's like it's things, and so you really see this,
wow,
give this great look at what it's like to run a Zen temple many hundreds of years ago.
Okay.
And look at really the practice, like what that practice was like in incredible detail.
Wow.
And I think it's, so right now that's what I'm reading through. And it is fascinating to see. Because again, I think we assume most of what happens, you know, with you know, monks working on enlightenment is, you know, they just sit there and have these deep conversations or think deep thoughts. But at the end of the day, still a lot of it, like, you know,
very human.
You need to wash your hands after you use the toilet.
Yeah, yeah.
Stuff like that.
Simple things, very human-like.
Yeah, important things.
Yeah. That's great. Any more? Like, do you think of right now? Or that's...
I think that's, for me, like, do you have a book that... you're reading right now?
Right now I'm reading I read this book every year. It's The Count of Monte Cristo. It's my favorite book, and I'm trying to read at least once a week. I mean, I don't actually read, I actually listen, like an audiobook, because I can't stand still for too long. But for me it just works, audiobooks. So I will try to look for this Moneyball and the book you just mentioned, but I doubt they got an audio version of that one, for the later one that you said.
The Showboat Ghetto, enormous.
Yeah, I don't think they're gonna. I'm gonna look into it, but I doubt they've got an audiobook version.
There's no audiobook version. I'm almost certain of it. If anybody tried to do it, they probably, like, you would lose a couple narrators. Like, one would die halfway through. Yeah.
Oh, and another book that I love. Are you familiar with Darren Brown, the UK illusionist type of guy?
No, he's
wrote a book called Happy, and it's about what happy means, what being happy means, and it's quite interesting. It's all about the Stoics, you know.
Okay.
Marcus Aurelius, some really good kind of life guide about, you know, be happy with what you have, you know, and stuff like that, and has been very helpful in terms of philosophy kind of thing of life. So I really recommend it to you if you got time. The Stoics, Marcus Aurelius being one of them, or Epictetus. I'll send you an email with some of the list if you want.
Oh, thank you.
Mark, I think I'm going to leave you because you're a busy man and I don't want to take too much of your time. So I just want to thank you enough for being on the show. And hopefully I'd love to listen to you again maybe sometime next year to see what you're up to.
Oh, if that'd be thank you. Yeah, thanks a lot for, you know, sharing, like having these conversations about mental health.
Yeah, I think it's something that people are more aware of now, aren't they? And it's all for the better, because I think every year we lose so many people due to their problems, and sometimes, you know, they go a bit too far, and it's a shame because it can be sorted out if they just start to talk. I think it's all it is. It's just opening the dialogue, isn't it?
Totally. It's great that we're finally having this dialogue.
Yeah, this conversation, yeah. Mark, I'll thank you very much again. Is it 8 o'clock this morning in Toronto right now, is it?
Oh, it's 7:30.
7:30, yeah. Well, I'm going to wish you a good day, and thanks for taking the time again. It's been fantastic, really. And thanks for your books.
You as well. Thank you so much.
Oh, nice, fantastic. Have a good day, and I'll see you at some point next year or something.
Yeah, I'll see you around. Have a great day.
Thank you, Mark.
Hi guys, thank you for listening to The Dialer Show. You can subscribe on iTunes Podcast, Google Play, and any other platform that you may choose. It's all in the show notes. If you want to connect with me on the social media, you can on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. I am usually under the name of Didier Soulier, so that is DIDIERSOULIER. Thank you again for listening, and I'll see you soon.